Ms. Baldwin, when you're ready.
Good morning, Your Honors. May it please the Court. Melissa Baldwin on behalf of the appellant, Mr. Ramirez-Avila. We are asking this Court to vacate Mr. Avila's sentence as procedurally unreasonable because the District Court erred in finding 2G2.2's cross-reference was satisfied by the defendant offering money for specific conduct. Section 2G2.2 lists four circumstances that trigger the cross-reference: causing, transporting, permitting or offering, or seeking by notice or advertisement. None of these circumstances are met by a defendant offering money for specific conduct.
May I ask you a question about a procedural issue in this case? So it's tricky because, of course, the PSR is sealed, and I understand why that is. It strikes me that the critical paragraph in the PSR is paragraph 20 on page 219 of the sealed JA. Sorry, paragraph 20 on page 219. And again, I know it's sealed, so I'm going to not quote it. But when you find it, could you go to the second to last sentence of paragraph 20?
Oh, sure, Your Honor.
And okay.
So,
no, well,
so this
sorry.
Is the summary of the minor's interview with the FBI
okay.
agent.
And I'm now looking. This is just so we're clear. We're all talking about. I'm looking at JA-147, where you object to the PSR.
Correct.
Okay. And I see paragraphs 15 through 20. And you. I read that sentence, and I'm not going to read it out loud, but the sentence you say, the evidence indicates some things. Let's posit for the sake of argument that sentence that you say is true, right? I don't see how that sentence actually takes issue with the truth of the second to last statement in paragraph 20, right? You say, when it's more in the nature of, there's some additional facts that the court might like to know, but I don't see you saying, we object that the penultimate sentence of paragraph 20 is not true. Is that
so
right?
I'd agree with that, but I disagree with the notion that it's a penultimate statement or
no,
that
no. I'm just trying to do it because it's sealed. I mean the second to last sentence. I'm just trying to direct your attention to the sentence.
No, I understand. So
okay,
sentence,
so the sentence here is recounting something that a victim said to someone, right?
Correct.
Okay, and said, and this I've checked is quoted in unsealed parts of the record. Said that he made and sent. That is quoted in unsealed portions of the briefs. And you didn't object to the factual truthfulness of the statement that the victim told the person who interviewed the victim that he made and sent, right? You didn't object to the truthfulness of that representation, did you?
Correct, but I don't think that statement supports the cross-reference in and of itself,
okay, so
especially
let me ask
in the context.
One question. So you could be doing two things. You could be saying that statement is not true, or you could be challenging the implications of that statement. For purposes of this question, you're not giving anything away. For purposes of this question, assume that that statement is true. Again, you're not conceding by positing my question is true. But assuming for the sake of argument that that statement is true, why doesn't made and sent, why wouldn't that establish causation? If he made and sent.
Because I think it assumes facts that aren't contained in that statement and are disproven by other facts in the record. So for example, if I say I made a painting and I made the painting on Monday and hey, John Doe offered me $20 on Tuesday and I sent it to him, that would be correct in saying I both made the painting and provided it when offered $20. But it doesn't show that I painted that painting before the offer was even made. And so that's the
problem. Well, hold on. Conceivably it does, but now I'm going to have to, I don't know how to ask this question without going a little farther in the sentence. It says made and sent these requested videos. Doesn't made and sent these requested videos very strongly imply that the making was after the request was made?
Again, this is not a direct quote from that interview. It is a summarization. And again, I think that's inserting facts that are not only not in the record, but the evidence shows that it actually is more likely not to be the case.
So why don't your objections say literally any of the words you just said?
I mean, I construe the objections as saying that. I mean, we point to the specific paragraphs we take issue with and point to additional evidence to rebut any suggestion or implication that those paragraphs might have at the notion Mr. Avila created, or excuse me, caused the creation of the video.
Well, but this is the part where I actually am very empathetic to the district court's seeming confusion, because when I read this, the sentencing transcript is not sealed, right?
Correct.
Okay. So the district court at the sentencing transcript says, you're saying, and the court says this on the record, I'm pretty sure, you're saying this victim made and sent other videos to other people. And the district court, I genuinely think the district court was confused, because the district court judge says, like, I don't understand why that's relevant. The fact that there were other victims of other crimes doesn't have anything to do with whether your client committed this crime in this way. Because there were parts of the argument I think the district court interpreted as like the victim was asking for it because he was doing this with other people. And the district court says, with all due respect, that's not a defense.
No, we're not saying that's not a defense, but the government's, you know, the government offered two, you know, bases for this cross-reference. And one, that was Mr. Avila caused the creation of the video,
sure,
which directly goes to the idea, if these minors were creating other videos, as we know they were, for money, then there is a causation problem here and there's a proof problem here. And the fact the government itself acknowledged that, because it said, hey, listen, we get it. If the district court, you know, finds we presented insufficient evidence to prove causation, you should still apply the cross-reference, because we think an attempt to violate 2251A satisfies the cross-reference. So the fact the government itself is acknowledging, you know, our evidence might not be as close as it says. And even the government's response on appeal, they don't make any effort to contextualize the other evidence. They point specifically, again, to paragraphs in the PSR that were never, you know, explicitly adopted by the district court to suggest and draw this implication.
Wait, what do you mean not explicitly adopted? Didn't the district court say, I adopt the PSR?
Well, I believe the court said it was adopting the guidelines calculations in the PSR.
And so you're...
Okay. Well, I mean, the guidelines calculations is different from, like, the factual paragraphs that we...
Well, actually, on that front, then, if we're gonna talk about what people said at the sentencing hearing, what do I do with the fact that Avila's counsel at the sentencing hearing said, to the extent I have objections, they don't impact the guidelines range? Because now it sounds like you're trying to assert that these objections do infect the guidelines range. This is at JA 28. At the sentencing hearing, I understand the counsel to have said that the objections to the PSR's statement of relevant conduct do not affect the guidelines range.
Well, in the sense that... Well, I don't think it matters, right? Because we're
really?
Saying...
What? But this whole argument is about the guidelines range.
No. I mean, I'm sorry. I don't think it matters in the sense whether or not a particular paragraph was adopted, because that did I explain.
I'm not asking about the adopted. I'm sorry. I pivoted to a different question. What do I do with the fact that at the sentencing hearing, defense counsel said, yes, we have some objections to the PSR. Those objections, I think this is a quote, the objections to the PSR, statement of relevant conduct, do not, quote, impact the guidelines range.
Well, I don't think that's a fair interpretation of the reading, because defense counsel goes on for another 6 pages to argue why the cross-reference doesn't apply.
So it'd be the range before the cross-reference. So that's how we should put it. Okay.
So here, there was no finding by the district court that any minor created the videos at D's direction. So that knocks out the causing aspect of the cross-reference for circumstances. There's no suggestion there was any transporting. Permitting here, although the government has argued it qualifies, you know, I think it's pretty clear it doesn't, based on the canon of consistent usage, because here it's cross-referencing to a guideline that's specific to custodial authority over the minor, as well as the statute itself, 2251B, limits, you know, criminal liability for this permissive action to ones with custodial authority. And then going on to the not offering or seeking by notice or advertisement. Now here we're asking this court to agree with the 11th Circuit's decision in Canon that the by notice or advertisement provision excludes private one-on-one communications like those Mr. Avila engaged in here. And we think 3 statutory principles support this construction. First, under the canon that a term should be known by the company it keeps, Notice should take on a public connotation given its presence alongside advertisements. Second, the rule against surplusage prevents this court from reading notice to its broadest possible extent of simply conveying any information.
So I got the notice in the advertisement the connection you're making, but the government is relying on the causing prong, not the notice in the advertisement.
Correct. So, I mean, our position is the cross reference doesn't apply because the court's ruling's wrong. It doesn't fit into any of the four circumstances.
I got that, but they only.
Yeah.
I think you can focus on that causing one.
Okay. I mean, we did argue and point out that the government has waived that argument, so I'm happy to leave it at that. But that said, we do think the 11th Circuit got it right, and notice or advertisements should exclude private one-on-one communication. But again, in creation, and something I want to point out that probably wasn't clear in the briefs, but I think is pretty, telling as to what happened in this case. Now, if you look at paragraph 32 at JA 136, that's the initial draft PSR in this case. When the probation officer said the cross-reference, applies here, and quote, because the offense involved causing a minor to engage in sexually explicit conduct. Right? And so then the defense objected, submitted our additional evidence showing like, hey, we have other evidence showing that these minors, were creating these videos and distributing to other people. And as well as, some of the text communications present a real suggestion that these minors, the videos Mr. Avila received were created before the communications in that case. So after those objections came out, what the final PSR did was it took out that causation finding in the initial PSR and said, paragraph 37 at JA 222 said, a cross-reference quote must be evaluated, and then simply quotes the language of the cross-reference. So, and that's why the government's reliance on the statement of reasons adopting the PSR, subject to its rulings at the sentencing, doesn't help the government here, because
when did the court adopt that PSR? Was it during the sentencing hearing or after?
So, my position is the district court adopted the guidelines calculation from the PSR and then adopted the PSR findings beyond the guidelines calculation after sentencing in the statement of reasons.
Because he definitely did that, right? JA-220, the district court checks a box that says, I adopt the PSR subject to the following changes.
Yeah, absolutely.
Which would include the factual parts of the PSR.
Right. I mean, I think, again, it doesn't really, we've talked about it, and I don't think it determines it, but, the ruling is it's the oral pronouncement at sentencing.
This is Rogers and stuff. I mean, it's the sentence is what the district court says at sentencing.
Right.
That would be a further extension to say the district court can't adopt findings in its written order.
Well, no, but I think 18 U.S.C. 3553C, which requires an on-the-record explanation for sentencing, would kind of implicate that. So going back to the causation, so here, the fact that the court's finding itself, if you look at JA 40, says nothing about causation. In fact, it says the offering of money for specific conduct. So it is that precursor step to any creation. And, that offering money for specific conduct does not equal causation, right? I mean, if I go to an artist booth at a craft fair and pay $20 for a cat picture, that in no way establishes if that cat picture was made as I was standing there or if it was made before the fact. And so based on that, we think the cross-reference here was erroneously applied. And I guess I'll just quickly address the question of review because the government has posited that this should be reviewed for clear error. We disagree with that. This is subject to de novo review. It's a legal question as to whether or not the court's finding offering money for specific conduct falls outside or inside the boundaries. We have no dispute. We agree.
So that's a dispute, because that's a dispute about what the guideline means, right? That whether offering money for specific conduct without more, whether that satisfies the guideline, that is a legal question.
Right, correct, Your Honor. So we absolutely agree that Mr. Avila offered money for specific conduct. The question is whether or not that finding can support the cross-reference. And, as we laid out, it doesn't fall into any of the four circumstances enumerated. Therefore, it was error for the district court to apply that cross-reference. And as a result, we're asking this court to vacate the sentence and send it back for resentencing with instructions not to apply the cross-reference.
Wait, what? Why would that be the remedy? The remedy is the district court didn't do a good enough job explaining why it did. The remedy is to instruct it that it can't do it. Why isn't the remedy to say, do it again, do it right?
Well, because the finding the district court made doesn't support the cross-reference. And so I don't think there's no reason to send it back and wholesale do it over again. I mean,
hold on, but you said we don't need to reach the by announcement because the government has waived it on appeal. But if we send it back for resentencing, the government has not waived it before resentencing, right? Let's say hypothetically one were to be inclined to be of the view. I mean, you've cited the 11th Circuit's decision, but of course there is a circuit split on that precise question. And the Sixth Circuit has an opinion saying, with all respect to the 11th Circuit, we think you're totally wrong about that. And we haven't answered that question, right?
Correct, Your Honor. And so, I mean, I can't give you an authority saying, you know, you cannot send it back for, you know, further reconsideration.
Doesn't that seem important? Because isn't the normal remedy for a procedural sentencing error to say, try again? That is the remedy we impose for procedural sentencing errors.
No, not necessarily. I mean, if the legal error is the cross-reference applies because of X, but it doesn't, I don't see why that then opens the can of worms to, you know, reevaluate it.
Really? It just feels like we vacate district court decisions all the time and says the reason that you did what you did is not valid. Consider again whether you can do the same thing for a different reason. That is routine in appellate review all the time.
Right.
Not you can't do what you did.
Right. I see my time has elapsed. May I just answer the question? I agree that this court does that all the time. I would say this court also all the time has cases where it says the government doesn't get a second bite at the apple, right? They have had their opportunity. They presented their evidence. It wasn't enough evidence to show causation given the unique facts of this case. And so in line with that, you know, that's our requested remedy.
Right.
Thank you, Your Honor.
Thank you, Ms. Baldwin. Mr. Enright?
Thank you, Your Honor. May it please the Court. Anthony Enright for the United States. The District Court properly applied the child pornography production cross-reference because Avia caused a 15-year-old boy to make and send sexually explicit videos of himself with his offer for and ultimately payment.
So, Mr. Enright, I ask your friend on the other side what I viewed as the problem for them? Let me identify what I think is the big problem for you.
Certainly, Your Honor.
I'm looking at JA 40, and that is not what the district court said.
The
district court said, I'm going to overrule the objection. That doesn't really add anything. He then quotes the guidelines. Fine. And then he says, this is on JA 40 transitioning to 20 to 40. So there's this whole debate. Did he cause it? Did he not? No matter else we can say, the parties at the sentencing hearing are disagreeing at the sentencing hearing.
Yes.
And I read why the district court does what he does, and he doesn't say, I agree with the government that he made these videos in response to the defendant's request. He sort of quotes the original draft PSR and maybe the language of the commentary. And I think the most natural interpretation of what the district court says is, I don't have to resolve that. Because really the only sentence the court gives to explain why it's doing what it's doing, this is the conduct involved in the factual basis, that there is money offered for specific conduct that meets the elements of the cross-reference. That is the sum total of what the district court says. And it sounds to me like what the district court is saying is, offering money for conduct is enough, doesn't matter if the videos were made in response to this defendant's request. And that strikes me as different than saying, I find as a matter of fact, these videos were in fact made in response.
So I have a few responses to that. I think the first is I disagree with that interpretation of the language. Because first, the court does quote verbatim the entire standard and then says, it does appear to the court that this, presumably the referent is the whole standard, is exactly the offense conduct involved in the factual basis. And then second, he says that there was money offered not for specific conduct, the end, but specific conduct that meets the elements of the cross-reference.
So the idea is
that causation is one of those elements. I'm sorry, I didn't mean to.
No, please. I'm sorry. We can all agree it would have been better if the district court had just said the words, I find the videos were made in response to the defendant's request. We all agree we'd have a much easier case if the court had said that.
Absolutely, Your Honor. But there's a rule for how this court scrutinizes the district court in United States versus Gross. It didn't make it up there, but most recently. You presume the court knows and applies the law, unless it explicitly says, here's the standard, it deviates from what this court has said or what the standard is, and I'm applying that.
Well, but, okay.
This is an explanation.
Can I take a step back? The question I asked your friend on the other side. You agree with me, there's a question. The question is as follows. Is this guideline satisfied simply by offering money in exchange for specific conduct without any showing of anything else? Is the guideline satisfied simply by that? Do you agree with me that the question of whether that satisfies this guideline is a legal question reviewed de novo?
That's probably correct.
Like whether that's a correct formulation of the law is a legal question.
Yes, the interpretation of the guideline, where its boundaries
sit. And do you further agree with me that it appears that, among other things, the parties before the district court were disputing what the proper interpretation of the law was, with the government arguing, look, there's language in the government's filings, I think there's language in the draft PSR, there's honestly even some language in the guidelines commentary that suggests that mere solicitation is enough, that's all you need, right? There was atmospheric arguments being made about that, right?
I agree that that's in the commentary to an extent, but we argued pretty specifically, as did the other side, that this is about causing. Right before this, on page 40, what's our argument? By coercing and enticing with the money, he caused G. That's using the reference, talking about the guidelines.
No,
those are ways of causing. Caused G to make the videos and send the videos to him. That was our argument.
But to answer Judge's question regarding the offering of the money is, would that fit in the offering part of which you are not bringing to us?
That's true, Your Honor. I think if there's a fair argument that you can seek by notice to have somebody provide engage in sexually explicit conduct for the purpose of producing a visual depiction.
This is literally the Sixth Circuit's holding?
Yeah, the Sixth Circuit and the Ninth Circuit and the Seventh Circuit and the Tenth Circuit.
But
I didn't raise that argument. I'll be very candid about that. But
so you're not going to argue then today?
I'm not, Your Honor.
Okay.
I will happy to answer any questions this court may have about it, but that's not our argument. Our argument is that it was cause. Our argument below was that it was causation. And the court even clarified with the defense. The defense said, I think on page...
But the government did argue that other provision below. You didn't argue. I just want to clarify the record. The government at various points below did it ever?
Not exactly. We argued that an attempt would satisfy the requirement, and I have not repeated that up.
Okay.
Up here.
Thank you.
But we did that in papers, and then in the district court, we told it was causation, and the court clarified. I wrote it down, but now my eyes are not letting me focus on this, unfortunately. But the defendant also had an exchange with the court where the court said, and so you're arguing that there wasn't causation here. He said, yes. That was the question before the court. Nobody argued a different interpretation of the guideline.
Okay, so go back to causation then. Can I ask you, is it possible to cause something that has already happened? Can Y cause X if X has already happened before Y?
Generally not, Your Honor.
Right. So factually, if as a factual matter, all of these videos existed before the defendant's request, the defendant's request could not have caused them, right?
I think that's correct, Your Honor, but there's plenty of evidence. Plenty.
No, I understand. That's a separate question. We agree that if...
Yes, there's no cause if he sent a video that he made in the past in response to his request to make a video for me. But the fact that that was the request, that was the nature of the request, and he even expressed in the parts of the record my friend cited, which were our filings, not in the pre-sentence report, the victim even expressed physical pain at the kind of sexual act he was asked to engage in right then. And they even have a conversation about when they agree on what the conduct will be. He says, well, I should ask permission. Can I discuss sealed parts of the appendix? I believe I don't have an objection to that. But I want to make sure because we have had a little bit of a back and forth on that.
Well, I don't think we ruled on that motion.
We did file a motion last week. I don't think we've seen a ruling, but that's why I want to just get the court's permission. I won't be gratuitous at all.
Is it for the nature just because of graphic language you want to use or because it this issue here in terms of whether or not there was causation.
The only reason I ask is because this part was formally sealed. It's in the second volume of the joint appendix.
We know as a court we honor sealed documents that come up from the district court.
Yes, Your Honor.
And you noticed Judge Hyten this morning, he did the same thing in his question. He was very cautious to do so. And if we are, and I assume that you ought to think that you have to do so too, and therefore I don't think you would.
Absolutely, Your Honor. I'm not going to reveal the victims' names. I just want to reveal one piece of language the parties exchanged that I think sheds light on the answer to this court's question, which is what kind of evidence shows causation specifically that this video was made in response to a request from the defendant. I don't have to, but I think it will help the court.
Could you tell me what paragraph you're referring to so that I can find the information you would like?
I am referring to
let us read it.
Page 155 of the joint appendix. It's the top grid, and it's the exchange that occurred at 2220 and 2221. 155. Now that's part of our brief, but my friend has relied on that part of our brief as evidence that it would be physically impossible for him to have made the video. They actually make an agreement that I think a reasonable finder of fact could say was, you're going to engage in this conduct right now. Then 3 minutes approximately pass, and the victim expresses pain associated with the kind of conduct he was asked to engage in. And then he sends the video, and he acknowledges the video, praises it, and asks him about, hey, next time would you maybe film it differently? That's evidence from which a reasonable trier of fact could find that he made the video and engaged in sexually explicit conduct in response to an offer for money, and that the Avila cost that conduct.
But just to identify where this is an argument that the district court could have made that finding, which is separate from the question of whether the district court actually made that finding.
That's correct.
Okay.
This is the clear error standard.
No. The question of whether a district court made a finding is not subject to clear error review.
I agree with that, Your Honor. But if this court agrees that the court made a sufficient finding.
Yes, sure. Then it's
this establishes that it was not clearly erroneous.
Yeah.
But under Gross, Your Honor, this court doesn't require the court to set out, you know, either recite the standard. Although the court did that. The court recited the standard and said this conduct meets that standard. He went beyond what this court requires. What Gross says is that the district court's presumed to know and apply the law. He has to give you a much better reason than I think he did.
But is that true when the law is disputed?
I don't think there was any dispute about the law.
Okay. Two questions.
I'm sorry. Perhaps not.
It just seems weird that we would presume it. I know you're saying this isn't this case, but it would seem to me bizarre to say that in a case where the parties are fighting over what the relevant legal standard is, we presume that the district court got the right answer, whatever the answer happens to be.
Yes, Your Honor. Well, it's not a conclusive presumption. I think that would be evidence that might overcome the presumption. There was a dispute about the standard. The court ruled for one versus the other. Sure. Presumably the court ruled for one because that was something the court had.
The reason I say it is I'm not sure it's the only one, but when I read what the district court, and at some point we're just talking about how we interpret what the district court judge said. I think to me the most natural way to read what the district court says at J40 is, wow, that's a hard question. I don't need to resolve it because I find that soliciting is good enough and we definitely have soliciting here. That's a hard question. Let's not get into it. There's disputes about what people are fighting about. But fortunately, I mean, courts do this all the time, and I'm sure I've done it too, which is like, wow, there's some really hard questions. But fortunately, I don't have to resolve them because I can just decide this case on another basis.
Your Honor, I guess what I'm missing is the language of, wow, this is hard, or I disagree with something. Since there wasn't a dispute about what cause means, and there wasn't a dispute, as I think your Honor's question revealed, there wasn't a dispute about what the quotes from the chats were, or a dispute about what the victim said to the FBI agents. What my friend argued below was, well, he engaged in this kind of conduct with other people and he sent videos to other people. And the court addressed that and said, I don't really see how that affects it. But I understand it to be cause. I don't think it's appropriate to interpret the court as saying, I'm going to make this legal finding that nobody really joined, especially when he says, this conduct meets the elements of the cross-reference. Because it does. That's an accurate statement if he is going with the government.
What conduct did?
It says the conduct in the pre-sentence report, in the factual basis. The conduct in the factual basis. it does appear to this court that this is exactly the offense conduct involved in the factual basis, and it says that right after it recites the entire guideline, practically verbatim, on page 40 of the joint appendix.
When the court said, I think it was read, part of it said, it doesn't matter that you made this for other people.
Yes, sir.
Is that the court was saying that this is about solicitation, what you did? But the fact that he made it for someone else, for example, is important in this case, isn't it?
I don't think so, Your Honor. I mean,
there's evidence that this was going on apart from it, right?
I think it would matter if he had a library of child pornography that he was sending to people upon request. But here we have very explicit evidence, including the evidence we had just had a discussion about, that he made this, at least this one particular video.
Well, you mentioned that there were two victims, but on appeal you pretty conspicuously drop one of the two victims. And at least, because with regard to that victim, it certainly seems like there is evidence in the record that may suggest this library account, which is like, that with regard to this other victim, that victim was maybe sending things that already existed.
Yeah, we're not arguing that Jay's conduct alone would establish.
Except before the district court, you were relying on Jay. You weren't just relying, like on appeal, you're only relying on one of them, but before the district court, weren't you relying on both of them?
That may be correct. I may have missed something, but I think, Your Honor, we were focused with Jay on some of the other objections. So we talked about them together.
Mm-hmm.
But I think our main position, and we say it right on page 40,
I agree. Right before the court rules, the government's talking about G.
I'm honestly a little bit fuzzy on everything we said.
Sure.
It's possible we did say something like that.
But I certainly agree. The ending of the government's argument is all about G. I'm looking at
it. Yes. I mean, I'm making that point here today. G supports that. I think there's a February conversation that's very similar. They discuss making specific videos and engaging in very specific conduct. He says, I can do this. I'll do that. Okay. Well, that's good. That's not one of the charged ones, but it's certainly relevant conduct. It's in preparation. It's part of the same course of conduct. But I think the strongest is that April 22nd conversation where they talk about making. And that is enough for a reasonable fact finder to find, well, he didn't just pull from a library of pre-made videos.
Okay, so now you've drawn my attention to what the government says right before the district court ruled, and it doesn't strike me as that it helps you. Because the government in the penultimate paragraph right before the district court rules, this is the government's rebuttal, this is the instant before the district court rules, I think the word cause can include pretty much every one of the verbs that's included in 122151. I think that's just dead wrong as a matter of statutory interpretation. So if the defendant caused them to make the child pornography, I'm not sure what that means, and send it by enticing them, coercing them, persuading them. And then I look at this paragraph about G and it says, again, the chats are clear that this defendant wanted videos of certain conduct and offered to pay and did pay G for the videos. That doesn't prove that – none of that is saying the evidence shows that G made the videos in response to that request. None of that – so the very last words the government says to the district court before the district court rules are, again, at least amenable to me to the interpretation, it doesn't matter whether the videos were made in response to the request.
Well, except we said by coercing and enticing G with the money, he caused G to make and send the video.
But now we're just debating what cause means. And I agree, like, there's this language, well, I mean, candidly, I don't know if we have to get into it, but there's language, for example, in the commentary that said, isn't the word soliciting in the commentary? I think it is.
I have the book, but I don't remember. But it does say construe broadly. And what is in the commentary is a repeat of the main guideline language.
But then it adds a whole bunch of verbs that aren't in the main guidelines.
Yes, but Your Honor, those all, you know, I guess there's a statutory interpretation question. Can you persuade, can you coerce if they don't do it?
Mm-hmm.
Just saying it. That's not what we were arguing at any point. Our argument was maybe he sought, maybe he coerced, maybe he cajoled, maybe he enticed, maybe he did this, but ultimately he caused it because whatever verb you use, it convinced him to make the video. Convinced him to make the video. That's the key word we use in our argument, I think, is make. It caused G to make the videos, which we said, I think, pretty clearly. I mean, I suppose Your Honor, Your Honor's Your Honor, but I would be very surprised if anyone in our office thought we weren't making that point, especially in the light of what I think was the strength of the evidence here. I do want to address you know, the point about the objections. I think we've talked about it enough, but I want to emphasize at the end of the sentencing hearing, I think we made clear to the court that the victims had decided not to be too cooperative with us. We obviously could have, if we wanted to, you know, force the victims to appear and, you know, using a compulsory process, but they are victims. We generally don't do that. We're here. There's no dispute about what they said. That's not something we would have been likely to do. So there's a good reason why we relied on the fact that the defense didn't say, no, this account of the exchange doesn't accurately capture what was said. So I think, and the court did on page 250, adopt the pre-sentence report subject to only saying I overrule the objections. So the court made that finding. And then it's in the pre-sentence report where the court says, where the probation officer concluded he engaged in conduct that met the standard. So I think the finding was made. This court could obviously, we could obviously disagree about what it is, but I think, especially in light of Gross, this court can determine that the court made a finding that it can affirm. If this court disagrees, though, to another point you made, the remedy would be, if this court believes that the court applied the wrong standard or misinterpreted the guideline, the remedy would be to send it back so the district court could apply the guideline correctly or apply the correct standard. Unless this court finds there's a clear error, that the evidence doesn't support the finding, there would be no reason to take that authority away from the district court. So I see my time is almost up. If the court has no further questions, I'll yield the rather paltry amount I have of time back to the court.
Thank you, Mr. Enright.
Thank you, Your Honor.
Ms. Baldwin, you have some rebuttal time.
Thank you, Your Honors. So I'll just start with the commentary does not include the word solicitation. It does.
My bad.
Yeah, it does add verbiage from 2251, but 2251 prohibits substantive violations as well as attempts, and an attempted violation of 2251A would be, the guidelines would be calculated under 2X1.1, which, as it just so happens, would be Mr. Avila's guideline calculations without the cross-reference to the production guidelines. That's not here because the government has not made the arguments that it made in the district court below that an attempted creation of child pornography should qualify for the production cross-reference. And I think there is a pretty difficult and persuasive Stinson argument that the commentary note does not deserve controlling weight or deference because it broadens the guideline language itself, as well as I think there is a parroting problem. And now just going on to the standard of review here, Gross does not help the government in this case. In fact, it helps us. Because what this court found in the Gross case was it rejected that there was any legal error. So what the court said was, if the district court applied the correct legal standard, then the finding that the enhancement applied is reviewed for clear error. And then it contrasted that case with the Lewis case where the district court had applied a general rule of application to trigger a guidelines enhancement. And this court found that that general rule of application was legally erroneous, and that was reviewed for de novo review. And that is exactly what we have here, where the district court's finding that...
Well, but there was a dispute about legal error in Gross. I'm looking at 721, it's headnotes 4 and 5. Gross further contends the district court did not apply the correct legal standard because it did not explicitly reference the guidelines commentary that sets up three categories of serious bodily injury. Gross tried to argue that was a legal error, right?
Right, but it was rejected, so I don't think there's...
Well, and we said because we're not going to assume the district court was unaware of the three categories just because the district court didn't reference the three categories.
Right, so if the court disagrees with us and thinks an offer of money for specific conduct satisfies the cross-reference, yeah, it's clearly erroneous and, you know, and so we did make an argument that it doesn't satisfy clearly erroneous, given all the contrary evidence in the record, which the district court's one-paragraph ruling would not acknowledge and otherwise address, which is a basis to find a factual finding clearly erroneous under this court's Wooden decision. But as I think Judge Hyten's pointed out, the record doesn't support that the district court made that finding. If you read the district court's ruling at JA 40, the district court did not find causation. I think it went out of its way to not find causation and instead said, I'm doing the offering of money. And that doesn't satisfy. But even if there were some questions as to whether or not what the district court's findings were on that point, you don't assume a finding that was not made. At that point, you know, I think the district court's fact finding was deficient to frustrate this court's review, and the response should be to send it back to make those findings so that we can make an argument that those findings were clearly erroneous. Because we think there is an argument here that it would be clearly erroneous to find the evidence satisfied the cross-reference.
So that's an alternative remedy, because first you said we should tell the district court you can't do this, but now, which makes total sense. You're arguing in the alternative. First, we should tell the district court it can't do it. In the alternative, we should say do it again. Is
correct.
There?
Okay. Yes. Okay. So with that said, the district court's finding that the offer of money for specific conduct to apply the production cross-reference was error, and we've asked this court to reverse the sentence, vacate it, and remand for resentencing. If there are no further questions, I will rest.
Thank you so much, Thank you. Counsel. Appreciate you.
I'm good.